Chapter 37. Jimmy Moran looked out the window of his taxi as the city whooshed by in the rain. It asked the driver to deliberately go the long way around, just so they could go up the north side of the quays. When they'd passed the point where they'd hit the security van a couple of months before, he'd popped his head out and waved at the three Garda cars following him. They'd stuck to him like glue for the last few days, and he wanted to wind them up. They had managed to get the gym he went to closed down for some sort of building code violation bullshit. They could do what they liked. It'd take more than that to break him and Tommy Carter. Franco Doyle, on the other hand, well, Jimmy had been telling Carter for a long time that Franco was the weak link. If it had been Jimmy in the van that night instead of bloody Franco, O'Donnell never would have taken a hit. No doubt about it. The last Tommy had heard, he was recovering all right, and more importantly, the cops and all their searches hadn't got close to finding him. They had nothing. That was not to say the last week hadn't been without its stresses. His ma's boyfriend, Rick, had been nailed for cheating on his benefits, and she'd been done for stealing Sky TV with that dodgy dish Jimmy had got her for Christmas. The pigs were making a nuisance of themselves. It had also been over a week since Jimmy had last got his end away. He had a rule: never have sex in the 3 days before a job. He wanted to be sharp, on edge. And in the 5 days since, due to his permanent entourage, it had not really been possible. He'd tried to convince Carol to come over, but the cops outside had put her right off. She was on parole and didn't want any hassle. He'd phoned around, but nothing. That was why the text from Wendy had been so appreciated. She was only a 6 to look at, but she was a wild one in the bedroom. A proper 9 with the lights out. She'd even come up with a way he could get away from his chaperones. Jimmy was buzzing. He threw a rapid punch combo at the back of the passenger seat in front of him.
"Hey," said the taxi driver. "What are you at?" "Nothing, Elvla. Relax."
The driver had already had a full-on freak-out when he'd arrived to pick Jimmy up and had been greeted by his police escort. He'd tried to refuse to take Jimmy anywhere, but Jimmy had been having none of that and got in before the dude could drive off. Jimmy knew his rights. Couldn't chuck him out without a reason. Jimmy looked at the meter, just ticking over 17 quid. He opened his wallet and slid out a 20 note. They hit a red on the pedestrian lights coming off the Halfpenny Bridge. Perfect. As the vehicle came to a halt, the door automatically unlocked. He watched the lights closely. Still on red. A few boisterous lads on a night out and a couple hand in hand crossed the road, heading over the bridge towards Temple Bar. The green man changed to amber. He put his hand on the door handle. "Red man." Jimmy shoved the door open, while simultaneously tossing the cash onto the front seat.
"Thanks, you miserable old prick."
And he was gone, running. Down Liffey Street, past the statue of the old ones sitting on a bench having a chat. Behind him, he could hear car doors opening and raised voices. As he turned the corner into the north lots, he glanced back to see three uniforms charging after him, but they were only just turning onto Liffey Street. He ran the 20 yards to the black metal gates of the Bachelor's Walk apartments. He looked up and down. There it was, the key, just where Wendy had said it'd be, dangling from a piece of thread at the top of the gate. He ripped it down and quickly stepped across to the pedestrian entrance. In. Open. Shut. He stood on the other side, just out of reach as the three uniforms slammed against it. Jimmy Moran laughed heartily.
"Look at the stadium! Open this gate."
"Or what?"
"Sorry, boys. I'm off for a night's riding, and you are not invited."
He thrust his hips a couple of times and then bowed. As he turned and walked into the internal courtyard, he could hear one of the cops yammering into his radio.
Subject is in the Bachelor's Walk apartments.
He moved quickly. It wouldn't be long before they buzzed a number on the intercom and somebody didn't think the "This is the Gardaí, open up" line was bullshit. He rushed across to the door she had told him about and found it propped open with a rock. He kicked it away and closed the door behind him. She was on the fourth floor, but he didn't bother with the lift. He was buzzing. He'd fucked the police, and he was about to fuck her. At the top of the stairs, he turned right, like she'd said. The door was open. That had been her last text. Remember, 416, the door will be open. I'll be in the bedroom waiting. He slammed through the door, rubbing his hands together, and was down the hall in two strides. He pushed open the bedroom door. There she was, on the bed, tied up, gagged, blindfolded. Wendy, you kinky... That she was still fully clothed barely had time to register before he heard the click behind him. He knew the sound instantly.
"Don't move," said a northern voice.
At the far side of the room, the wardrobe door opened and a man in a balaclava stepped out, a gun in his hand too. On the bed, reacting to the noise around her, Wendy gave a plaintive mumble through her gag. The man in the balaclava looked down at her, without his gun veering an inch from Jimmy.
"Relax there, love. It'll be over soon."
The man stepped forward and addressed Jimmy directly.
"Take three steps back into the sitting room. Try anything and you're a dead man."
Jimmy did as instructed. He could hear the man behind him moving back too, staying far enough away to prevent Jimmy trying anything. 2-0. His odds weren't great. He stepped into the front room. The second man spoke again.
"Against the wall."
"Who the?"
"Against the wall. Now."
Jimmy moved back. The wardrobe man nodded at his compatriot, who took his balaclava off.
"Remember me, do you, Jimmy?"
It took him a moment, but he did. The last time he had seen him, Jimmy had been tying him to a tree in the Phoenix Park, giving him a few slaps because he didn't like his attitude. The wardrobe man took his balaclava off now too. Him, Jimmy recognised straight away. Paul Roberts, the IRA boy. The last time Jimmy had seen him had been through the sights of a sniper rifle.
"It was my nephew's birthday last week, so I decided to get him you."
Jimmy looked around as casually as he could, scanning for anything he could use.
"You know Tommy Carter will have you both for this, don't you?"
Roberts laughed.
"Oh, Jimmy, who the fuck do you think set this little date up? We don't know what skanks you're banging." "Look at his face," said the nephew. "He's only just getting it. Beautiful. Why don't you go and..."
In a couple of hours, neighbours would describe the thump of the body hitting the floor and how they dismissed it as somebody just moving furniture.